Are you ready to explore God's wild and wonderful world? Welcome to the Nat Theo Podcast. I'm your host, Erin Lynam. I'm a certified master naturalist, Bible teacher, and author, and I am so excited to dive into God's written word, the Bible, and his created world with you. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be on TV? I imagine being on TV would be a lot of hard work. When I watch a program, I often think about how many retakes the people on the show have to take of a certain scene. Maybe they say a word incorrectly, or they forget a word, and they get tongue-tied, and they have to reshoot a scene 17 times, or maybe more. I also imagine that a lot of things on a TV show set are predictable, or things that can be controlled. There might be things like props, or a background, or a few actors and actresses. But what about when you bring animals onto the scene? That might get a little unpredictable. Today, we are meeting a man who creates an incredible TV show, including lots of different creatures. Peter Schremer is the host of the Hike and Seek show, where he teaches about God through all kinds of creatures and plants and other things in nature, much like we do here on Nat Theo. I'm so excited to introduce you to Peter and really bring you behind the scenes of Hike and Seek. Let's meet Peter. Peter, we are very excited to have you on today. My kids and I have loved following your adventures on Hike and Seek and meeting the incredible creatures that you teach about. You introduce viewers to creatures like sandhill cranes, millipedes, wolves, a corn snake, which I actually had a pet corn snake growing up. So that was, that was really interesting to me. And then my kid's favorite episode was the hellbender salamanders.
Yeah.
That was super fun. So we are very excited to have you on and hear about your adventures. Welcome to Nat Theo.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, Peter, can you just start with what inspired you to create the Hike and Seek nature series?
No, that's a good question. Basically, I mean, I grew up watching a lot of nature documentaries and programs as a child, but of course, all of them that are out there on mainstream television talk about evolution. They are godless, you know, in terms of their worldview. I did also grow up watching really old Moody Bible Institute science videos from the 60s. And, and they are very well done with the messaging, but the way they film them is so old now that it doesn't reach modern, you know, viewers in the same way that it did then. So I was like, well, wouldn't it be cool to start making some Christian-based, faith-based nature, you know, films and documentaries and series and things that were as fun as the stuff I was watching on TV, but also honored God and was biblically based. And so that was really the inspiration behind doing something like Hike and Seek.
I love that. I love that you saw a need. And your question was, well, how can I meet that need?
Right.
I love that.
And the other need, I would say, that was the main need, was the faith-based, you know, content. But the other one was, of course, we live in such a digital society now that everybody's on a screen and kids are growing up in environments very different than kids 40 years ago or 50 years ago. And so, again, trying to talk about how do we hike? You know, what do we do? How do we have a fun experience, a safe experience? How do we begin if we want to go outside and learn about God's creation? How do we start that process? I figured that was also a need in this, you know, current culture. And so wanting to provide something like Hike and Seek, how do we hike? How do we seek? How do we do these things? Was also a need that I wanted to meet.
I can definitely see that because in each of your episodes, you're very practical about how to do that. Even when you came here to the Rocky Mountains, talking about altitude sickness and things that we really have to think about and be careful about here because I have experienced altitude sickness and it's not something you want to experience.
It's not fun.
No. Well, you talked about watching these programs yourself as a child. Did you enjoy nature as a child? And can you share maybe one or two favorite memories in nature from your childhood?
Yeah, no, I grew up loving nature. I was homeschooled from the very beginning. And so I was my mom, cultivated going outside and spending a lot of time outdoors and just being curious and wanting to explore, all very healthy things, for kids to be doing. And so from the very beginning, I just had a natural curiosity and fascination with God's creation and animals and wildlife, but in a bigger sense, adventure, right? I mean, it's the exploring, it's the discovering, it's all the pieces, whether you love to look at geology or you love weather and meteorology, or if you're into plants and trees or animals or any of these things, it has to do with an adventure. And so getting outside, having adventures and exploring was a thing that I was naturally inclined, when I was a kid. But I think in a lot of ways, all kids are. All kids are designed by God to be curious, to want to explore, to want to learn, to want to discover. And then it's up to parents to encourage that, and that's what my mom did for me. And so from a very young age, I was outside and exploring God's world. And then again, as I grew, so did my love in that area. And that led me down the path that, I'm into today. And some of the ways that my mom did that in terms of the animal love and wildlife was she was part of what's called the Friends of Wildlife, which in the area I grew up in was a group of volunteers who get trained and certified to raise and release orphan baby mammals that people discover, and they call they call it like the Humane Society, or they call the pound, or they call somebody like, what do I do with this animal? And they call this group of people who have been trained to take that baby squirrel, that baby bunny, and feed it and take care of it and nurture it, and then also, but in a way that they're not imprinting or connecting with the person as a pet, but that they're actually in a position that they can be self-sustaining out on their own and be released back into the wild where God intended
Oh,
them to
that's
be.
great.
And so I grew up with that because my mom was trained in that, and then we did that as a family. So that was like super cool and a lot of fun. And so
Like, what
we
kind of animals did you take care of?
so a few that stood out, like one was really fun. We had a whole group of little baby possums. And even though possums are not exactly the most beautiful creature, they look kind of crazy. They are really neat animals, and they have that tail that they can hang from like a monkey. And so we got to have them. We would, if you wore a hoodie, they would go up in the little hood there or the little pocket in the front,
Oh my
and they'd
goodness.
hang on your finger. And we just had so much fun with them. And so the baby possums were awesome. But we did baby bunnies. And we did a few different squirrels, but the one that I remember most was a beautiful female red squirrel that we named Princess, and she was just such a cool squirrel. But it was so hard because as she aged, we had to back off. She was not a pet; she had to be released into the wild. So eventually, we did, and I forget how long after we did, but there was a time we were outside working in the yard, and this red squirrel came up to us really, really close, like way closer than a red
Oh,
squirrel ever
wow.
would, and looked at us and then ran off. And I'm like, that had to be her, because
Oh, my
she came within
goodness.
like 3 feet of us to look at us and then run off. And so that was
That
really
is so
cool.
special.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that my
Oh.
mom did with us growing up to really connect us with God's world, and also just to learn, right, about animals and care for animals and responsibility and conservation and stewardship and how that all works.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. So it sounds like your encounters with wildlife started pretty young,
Yes.
and you've definitely carried that into the work that you do today. What has been one of the coolest creatures that you have encountered while filming?
Well, it's a hard question to answer because, of course, there's been a lot of really cool experiences. And so it really is hard to pick one, but I would say that one of the coolest, and I'll bring this one up because it actually was not an animal that we had a segment about in the show,
Oh,
but it was a big male moose in the Rockies. And so
yes.
there's a shot of it. If you watch the Rockies episodes, it's in
With the
there.
collar,
Yes, with the
the one with the
collar.
collar. Yes, we
Yes.
noticed him.
Yeah, so he had a big radio collar on him. And so I've always wanted to have a moose encounter with a big male moose with the antlers, and everything out in the wild. So we were out filming, and we had seen tons of elk. By the you know we had filmed 3 episodes in the Smoky Mountains at that point, and this was our second episode in the Rockies. And so by this point, we've seen lots of elk. And so we're coming through all these elk and stuff, and we go down into this valley, and I see all these guys with, like, you know, binoculars and spotting scopes and cameras with big lenses, and I'm like, oh, that's probably another elk. And then, but then I noticed that the form in the trees was, like, really dark, like it almost looked black. I'm like, well, that is either a bear or it is a moose. And it was a moose. And so we whipped out all the cameras and got out there and started filming. And then I got one of the camera guys to go with me around to the other side of the wetland that he was crossing, which is the shots that you see, actually. And so he and I get on the other side. And this moose gets closer and closer and closer. And I realize that this moose is wanting to cross the road where we're standing. And we're not the only ones on the road. There's all these people with their phones out and in their cars and everything trying to film. And the moose gets mad that we're in his way. And so he sort of tosses his head and starts running back the way he came, like he was going to run up onto the road. And I realized he was going to run between me and the car. And I was well, this is not a good situation anymore, because an angry moose is not something you want to mess with. Mm-mm. And so fortunately, he was not able to get up on the road because of the tree line. There was too many trees in his way. So he came running back where we were. And so I got on the other side of a car to make sure there was something between me and the moose. And I started going the opposite direction of him to be safe. And then, so you have to be aware of your surroundings. You have to be thinking strategically about how to be careful and giving him space, right? He needed space. And so eventually he came running up onto the road, looked around, and then headed on off into the woods, and everything was good. But it definitely was exciting in the moment. So that was a pretty cool encounter.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got to see one, especially a big bull.
Yeah.
They're majestic, and I love every time I get to see one. Mm. We have had some pretty too close encounters with the moose as well. And you're so right that it comes down to having an awareness and knowing something about the creature and respecting it and its space. So wow, what a neat encounter.
It was fun.
Oh my. Well, what have been some of your favorite areas to film? Because your show really travels across the country. And so what has been one of the areas that you've enjoyed exploring?
Yeah, no, it's been really a lot of fun. Seasons 1 and 2, I don't say this in every episode, so unless you're paying attention or know, you wouldn't necessarily know this, but almost everything in season 1 and 2 are shot in the state of Michigan, where I'm from. And so
I did not know that.
And so the season 1 and season 2, well, because season 1 was done, just my wife and I were the only camera crew and team and editing, and I did everything myself.
Really?
Yes. Season 1 was just my wife and I, and that was it for the whole production.
Wow. That's impressive.
And so that was a lot of fun. We did that early on, just the two of us, and we traveled around in different parts of Michigan. That was before, actually, I moved down into northern Kentucky to be close to the museum, the Creation Museum, and the Ark Encounter. And so we filmed and did all of season 1 by ourselves in Michigan, where I knew where everything was and where to go and what to do.
Yes.
And because I've spent most of my life exploring the state of Michigan. And then for season 2, we went back to Michigan after I'd moved down to Kentucky to go to some places, again, where I knew where to go. I already had contacts. I knew, we didn't have to scout stuff ahead of time. And so, but because season 2 of Hike and Seek is all about the seasonal year, unless it was location specific about where we were, I wasn't always saying, here we are in Michigan. I'm saying, here we are in the season of winter. Here we are in the season of fall. And just talking about the season in general. And so Michigan has a very diverse 4-season cycle. And so we were able to talk about all those things and represent a good, section of the country by being able to film there. And so that was season 2. Now for season 3, that's where I was like, okay, now we've filmed in Michigan a lot. Where are we going next? And so the Smoky Mountains, which are part of the Appalachian Mountain chain, is where we filmed 3 episodes of season 2. And then we filmed 2 episodes in the Ozarks, which is the only mountain area between the Rockies in the west and the Appalachians in the east. And so the Ozarks is the only mountain kind of area in between the east and the west. And so we went there in Missouri. That was fascinating. Completely different than either the Appalachians or the Rockies. It's just a very different environment. And so that was a cool thing to explore. And then, of course, the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. And so we hit those different areas. And then to finish up the season, because we were trying to land on a certain number of episodes, we did something that for us in Northern Kentucky is local. We went to Red River Gorge, which is a very cool place and is the highest concentration of natural stone archways outside of the West. And so
Wow, I did not know
it's
that.
very cool. It's a place that you'd expect that kind of stuff, but out in Utah or Idaho or something like that, as
Like
opposed,
Moab.
correct. Except for we have a huge concentration of them here in northern, in eastern Kentucky, and a lot of people don't know about it. So it's a cool place.
That's neat. Wow. Well, we had so much fun, my kids and I, watching your episode in Rocky Mountain National Park because that is where we call home. We're very close to there and we visit the park very often. And they had so much fun in every scene, like, oh, I know that we've been on that trail and that's Dream Lake and that's Bear Lake. And so it was very fun seeing you exploring an area we love. And you taught us some things that we did not know. So we call them pika instead of
I was going to bring that
pika.
up. I was actually going to bring that up because there are two ways to say that too. And here's the thing. This is the challenge with having a TV show. Because if you're writing it in a book, doesn't matter.
Podcasting too.
Yeah, exactly. You have to say, like, how do you say this? So here's the deal. Almost always I side with the American pronunciation versus like the British pronunciation. And those are usually the two different English options. Like if you're looking at how to say a word, in English, it's either like here's the British way or the American way. I chose the British way only because pika sounds like the sound they make. Pika is the
That's a
sound
good
that it's
reason.
the squeak. And
I like that.
I was like, that just helps remember, like it makes sense, to remember the name. So pika is how Americans pronounce that. But when I saw that the option was for pika, I'm like, that's literally what the noise they make. I'm like,
That's good.
I'm gonna go with that. So that's what I did instead, but that was for that reason.
I love that you had a reason. I might need to switch. I might need to start calling them Pika. Well, okay, so when you were in the Rockies, other than the moose, what was a creature that you enjoyed learning about?
Well, I actually was going to say the pikas and the marmots, both of them, because they were the alpine zone creatures, way up at the high elevations where there's a lot less oxygen, and it's a tundra, and it's open, and it's cold, and it's windy, and all these things, and a lot of animals cannot survive. You find these adorable little creatures running around. And at one point on one of our hikes, this marmot was way too used to visitors because he was coming within like a foot of us looking for
Oh my
food.
word.
And so the guys had their cameras out and they were like, and he was like nose to the lens, like looking around because they were used to getting food from tourists. But they're very cool looking animals. And just to learn about how do they survive, in this cold environment, because of course in the wintertime it's extreme. It's not just kind of cold, it's like you can barely survive kind of cold. And so these creatures, God has designed in such a way to be able to hibernate or survive underneath the snow, to store food or to sleep, do different things. And it's just been really cool to learn about them on how they survive in such a barren and intense habitat area. That was kind of cool to get into and figure out more about.
Definitely. It's so fascinating. And I love how you brought in how the pika pika, how they dry their grasses and flowers that they forage for so that it doesn't rot. Like, how
Well,
fascinating
and they
that they're
also
designed to know how to do this.
exactly, and they also take poisonous plants and store it with that food. And that poisonous plant actually helps preserve the other edible food. And over time, the poisonous plant becomes edible to them. And so I was,
I didn't know that. That was one of the things you taught
yeah.
us. I had no idea.
Yeah, no, it was
So
totally
amazing.
fascinating. So you have these little pikas running around underneath the snow, going to their different haystacks to eat food over the course of the winter. And then you have marmots that are sleeping for like a majority of their lifetime, practically, and that's what they do. They just eat a lot of food, sit around, and then they just sleep for this massive part of the year to survive the cold temperatures.
Wow. Amazing. Well, okay, I'm sure you struggle like I do with, it's great loving the work that you do and that your work brings you into creation and you get to share it with so many people. But is it difficult to always be on camera while out exploring God's creation? Do you sometimes leave the camera behind?
I do. I'm on camera when we're filming a show, but the reason I'm doing the show is because I like to hike on my own, And so if I'm going out on a weekend to go hike or go explore, my phone is with me, to take pictures, and to maybe take a video of something I see, but I'm not going with the purpose to film a show, And so that would be a normal going out and hike and just be outside and it's beautiful weather. Let's go someplace. Let's go do something. So I'm only on camera essentially when it's needed. Like we're filming, we have a job, we have a mission, we have a goal, we have a show to get done. Let's go do this thing. That's when the cameras are out. And when they are, it can be tiring because if, for instance, like when we were in the Rockies, it was 2 weeks straight. That's a very
Oh,
long
wow.
time to be gone from home. It's a long time to be hiking in high elevations and to be hauling gear everywhere. And unlike the rest of the crew, I have to look like I'm healthy and happy and okay. Like they can roll out of bed, not take a shower, and be dead tired with bags under their eyes, and they can run a camera. But I can't look that way if we want the show to look like I'm having a good time. And so I need to watch it. Right, I have to watch my health. I have to watch how much I'm resting. I have to pay attention to those things. And every morning when I get up, it's like, okay, am I ready to be on camera, not just walk out the door? So there's a lot of pieces to my job as a TV host that is extra that I need to pay attention to and take care of than if I was just going to film something holding a camera. And so, and the guys obviously are working very, very hard, but the one piece of their job they don't have to worry about is how they look. And so it's like I need to focus on, okay, am I ready to do this? And that includes like making sure I don't get sunburned. Like if I'm out in the
Oh,
elements all
sure.
day long, I have to be paying attention. When was the last time I put on sunscreen? Or in some cases, I've actually used an umbrella to shade me from the sun because there's no cover. And I just need to be thinking like, we're going to be out in the sun for 3 days. And if I don't do something, I'm going to burn. Right. And so I need to think through those things a little more carefully than the rest of the crew to make sure that I'm on go. So when a shoot is over, it's a big, okay, I don't have to worry about all these details now. I can just, live my life. And so it's, no, don't get me wrong. I love it. It's so much fun. But yes, when you are on camera and when you're hosting, it's more exhausting because not only do you have these other things to worry about, but then also I'm memorizing lines all day long and I'm delivering lines. So there's a mental exhaustion that comes with delivering and that energy that I'm trying every time I'm trying to have lots of energy in what I'm saying, and so it can be exhausting. And so
Yeah, definitely.
that's all part of the job.
Wow. That's so interesting to think about all those things that you have to think about. And I'm sure even with the lines and having a bit of a script, you probably struggle like I do in that some of the scientific words or words around nature are difficult to pronounce. Or you say them incorrectly and you're like, wait, I need to say that again. Let's edit that out and let me listen again to the pronunciation, make sure I get
Yep.
it
So
right.
what I do, so I have a system now. Here's what I do is I any word that I need to say, because sometimes I actually avoid saying certain words that I'm like, you know what, I don't need to say this hard word because it's not going to help what I'm doing. I can say something else instead, and so I'll do that. But when I do need to say like a hard word or something that I know I'm going to struggle with maybe pronouncing or getting right, I almost always put it in the voiceover, not on an on-camera line. And
That's great.
so I deliver my easier stuff on camera. And then when I'm in the studio later, then I can like listen to that, double check how it, and then do it several times over and practice that and all of that. It makes it easier for me to handle some of that. But you are correct. How you say words matters when you're doing an audio thing. And so you got to focus on that and get it right.
That's great. I'm sure you come up with a lot of those tricks.
Yes.
Well, it's good to hear that. It is a lot of work. It's definitely worth it. Your work has impacted my family. Your work is impacting so many families and children. A lot of our listeners, I'm sure, want to go into a type of work where they get to explore God's creation as their job and share it with others. Do you have a word of advice for our listeners who want to turn their passion for God's creation into a job one day?
Yes, I've been asked this question quite a few times, especially by young people who are like a senior in high school, where they're thinking about where am I going to go next? What am I going to do? And what I respond with generally is not to say, well, yes, here's what you do, is I answer with, what kind of lifestyle and what kind of skill set do you have? What kind of personality are you? How has God designed you, basically, right? Because you can take a love of God's creatures and creation and do a whole lot of different things with it. I chose to be a wildlife television educator and host, doing things like that, where I'm writing and hosting and producing and presenting and teaching and all of that. But you can take the same passion that I have as a different person and become a research scientist, where you spend months out in the field or in the ocean studying and collecting information about God's world. You could become a vet and work with animals to help heal them and correct things and diseases and all that kind of stuff. Like you could be an animal doctor, or you could work at a zoo, or you could work at a nature center. I mean, the list actually continues to go. So there's a lots of different applications to loving and appreciating God's creatures and wild spaces. And so, do you want to work at a national park? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to present with a with owls to kids in schools? Like, what do you want to do? And so I would say, when kids or young people are wondering, how do I, what, you know, how do I make a job of this? Don't think of the job first. Think about, who am I? How has God designed me? When I was in high school, I volunteered at a turtle research project that was being done by grad students at the University of Michigan, and I loved it, but I learned that for me personally, I didn't want to be a wildlife researcher. I realized that I have too much of an artistic side and too much of a talent in teaching for me to be mostly alone in the woods, tagging turtles for 3 months and doing that kind of thing. Now, for some people, however, that's it, right? For some people, like, man, if you could put me in the woods and all I got to do is like spend quiet time in God's creation and find turtles and put tags on them, that's it for me, right? But for me, it was like, you know what? This is fun for a summer, but not the rest of my life. And so I realized who I have been designed to be. And I was like, okay, where then can I have an outlet for that God has given me in the world of creation and animals? So my point is, think about how God has designed you and what things that you're attracted to in terms of life and life choices, and then think about, now, where's a field of nature that falls within that? And so it's a little more of a complicated answer, but it actually is tailored then to the individual. The individual needs to be thinking through, how has God designed me? What kind of life do I want with God leading? And then look at the options for that field in that area.
That is such a good word of advice. Thank you. And I'm so grateful for just how you have followed God's calling and how he has made you to share his wonders with so many. So I will be sure to link to Hike and Seek and share it with our listeners. Thank you, Peter, for joining with us today.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Listeners, I hope that you enjoyed hearing about Peter's adventures and how he has turned his love for God's creation into a filmmaking career, and how he gets to teach so many people about God's wonderful works. If you have an interest in filmmaking, maybe you will one day make a film or a series where you get to teach others about God's wonderful works. Or, as Peter encouraged us at the end of the conversation, really think through, how has God made you unique? And how can you use your passions and skills and talents to turn your love for God and his creation into a career where you get to inspire others to explore God's wild and wonderful world? Whatever you want to be as you grow up, you can share God's love and truth in creative ways while exploring his creation. Make sure to click over in our show notes to watch Hike and Seek or find it on Answers in Genesis TV. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to share it with a friend and to subscribe, rate, and review Nat Theo wherever you listen. Until next time, keep exploring God's wild and wonderful world.
And I simply can't deny it, that I feel adventure calling out to me. Yeah, we are.
are all alone.